endeavor to take this quarter. Pure in heart, O God. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. May I devote my life wholly to Thee. Watch Thou my wayward feet. Guide me with counsel sweet. Purer in heart, help me to be. Purer in heart, O God, help me to be. Teach me to do Thy will most lovingly. Be Thou my friend and guide. Let me with Thee abide. Purer in heart, help me to be. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. That I Thy holy face one day may see, keep me from secret sin. Reign Thou my soul within. Purer in heart, help me to be. So on page 89 is the review in our workbook, and he titled it Personalizing the Purity Pursuit, and he pretty much gives us some questions that's going to serve as our review of the class. Let's start in Ephesians chapter 5, though. Ephesians chapter 5. Paul writing to the church at Ephesus, they were individuals that came from a Greece, Roman, Gentile background, and they had learned the gospel and obeyed the gospel. But this letter was a letter written to the church to remind them of the commitment they made when they became Christians, and to strive to serve the Lord, to do what is right, and to cast off what is wrong. And Ephesians chapter 5, there, verse 80 says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the world. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore he says, Awake you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." So remember, he's writing to Christians. These are already people that have obeyed the gospel. But he's still reminding them that they need to be careful how they walk. He's reminding them that they need to seek to be wise, that they need to use their time wisely, and seek to understand what the will of the Lord is. Verse 10, he says it there again as well, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. And so that's part of our life as Christians, is to keep finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. And that's how we pursue purity, in essence, right? That we're not looking to what's acceptable to the world, but looking what is acceptable to the Lord. And that helps us to purge ourselves from the dross and impurities of this life. So he says there in that first paragraph, the direction, the purity pursued is a direction for living. It is seeking God's ideal, God's best, with every situation and decision. Christians don't need to live in gray areas. That is, seeking how close they can get to sin without crossing the line. They need to be in the light, for they are the light of God. I just thought that was such a well-said summary of, in essence, all we've been trying to study and pursue this quarter. That would be one takeaway I get, is stop looking or trying to hedge around the gray areas, right? We're light, so act like light, right? Don't hide the light. Don't shun yourself from the light. You are the light of God in the world. And that's what he says there in Ephesians 5:8. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. So in this study, we talked about areas that we might call gray and how it is that we might refrain from those areas and pursue purity. In order for us to do this effectively, we must understand that purity pursuit impacts our attitudes and impacts our actions, right? In Galatians chapter 5, there, verse 22, here we see the attitude as Christians we must don. Galatians 5:22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. So when we say I'm just not a self-controlled person, then we're saying I don't have the attitude that's going to lead to purity. If we say, well, I'm just not a very loving person, then we're saying I don't have the attitude that's going to pursue purity. If I say I'm not a very kind or gentle person, then I'm saying I don't have the attitude that's going to pursue purity. And all of a sudden we've short-circuited our pursuit for purity. The Christian says, I'm going to seek to try and have these attitudes in myself, and when I don't find them, I'm going to work on them, so that then my attitude will impact my actions. I like what he said. He says, our bodies will follow our hearts. Well said, right? Our bodies will follow our hearts. And so, as we studied earlier, it's so important that we guard our hearts, right? For out of it spring the issues of life, the proverb writer said. So our body will follow our hearts. So where are we headed? There on page 91 is the questions. Where are you headed, right? Because we're talking about a pursuit, a direction in life. We're either pursuing purity or we're not. We're going a different direction. And so this here helps us head in the right direction. Let's do this review together. That first one, the purity pursued, in your own words. Did somebody have something that they, to them as they are personalizing this quarter and the study, that they wanted to share in that regards? Yes, Mother? Right, and to understand what the text is actually saying. And
the history that, you know, why did Paul write these letters? What was the reason? What were the concerns? That sometimes...
Right, so that's part of personalizing the purity pursuit. And I know you take that to heart, because you do, you're a good example to a lot of us. She comes over a lot of times with her Spanish commentaries, and she's like, can you move this over to this document and translate it? So she does personalize that. Yes, Liz. Very good. Anybody else? Yep, go ahead, please. Good, good. Anybody else? So, how does entertainment influence a person's heart and thought life? Liz?
Well, of course, I think of the TV, you know, because they're just, I mean, sometimes I can be watching it and all of a sudden it's like, whoa. And we just get so indoctrinated by it if we're not careful, and things can just don't pay attention to stuff. It's like the other night I had seen an advertisement for this Hallmark movie, and it, you know, you think Hallmark, that's safe, and I'm watching it, and near the end it's like there is a homosexual couple on there, and so they sneak those things in on you. And you know, I think as adults we can probably, hopefully, reason out a little bit better than, but with our children, you know, they're going to grow up with that stuff.
Right.
So, you know, the entertainment aspect, you know, we need to just need to be really careful of, because it will slowly, if you're in the water and you're not paying any attention, before you know it, because I remember one time being in the ocean and all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't near the shore because that water just slowly pushes you away, and you don't realize it until you can't touch the bottom.
Right, right.
And, you know, and so that the same thing happens to us with our entertainment.
Right, very good. So while we can certainly be influenced, you know, and we ought to be careful in guarding our own hearts, the youth especially are very impressionable. That's one thing I try to explain to my kids as well. Why can't we see this particular program? Well, you haven't had the years of filtering that and knowing and forming a foundation of what is right and what is wrong. And I was thinking about, yes, the liberal agenda, how active they are. I shared this with my family the other day. I thought it was a joke at first, but then I realized it was actually legitimately true. I think it was some group out in California of homosexuals, and they were singing a song. It was some kind of music video, and in the song it said, "We will convert your children. We will convert your children." And it's sad because they know that they're not going to convert us older people, right? They recognize our targets are on the next generation, because they realize they are more impressionable and easier to change their loyalties. And so, but it's sad to see how they are trying to win this war over the media. Yeah. Let me give somebody else a chance, Liz. Thor?
Yeah,
Right, very good point. It just tips the scale even further overboard, and before you know it, it could fall away. Right, good. All right, Liz?
Oh, I just thought of that, that with what you said with California and the people singing, I was just reading something recently about how, you know, that left is indoctrinating teachers and teaching children in the schools about transgenderism.
Right.
And stuff like that. So, you know, they're getting away from teaching, but they're influencing.
Right. And that was one reason why we were just tired of the school systems. We wanted to get them out because we could see where these directions were going in public schools. And it's why they could sing a song like, "We Will Convert Your Children." They have all these things that are kind of going in their favor. Good. Anybody else? Yes, Thomas?
Guy at work, he started, he's been there about 3 weeks. He's 18, and I was talking to his dad, and he said, "Well, all he's doing is game. You know, he plays games, video games all day and stuff. And so it's sort of a big change to him now. You know, he got to stay there 8 hours. You know, now, and so they put him. The boss, I've been mowing the yard for him while the other guy, janitor's been out. So." That boss said, "No, cut him loose on that yard out there." And that supervisor told him the other day, he said, "Remember now, you put some gas in that lawnmower before you go outside." And he just rode out the door like he hadn't said nothing. And he brought out the gas, got 15 minutes, he come back. Of course, at the end of the day, that boss told him, he said, "Well, where's the gas can?" He left it outside, and it's just things he just got to get used to, and all. And that boss said, "I went out there, there was 3 parts of the yard wasn't even touched." And he said, "It don't really matter. He can get them the next time." But he said, that's where that boss wanted to cut him loose. You know, he's trying to get him to do it on his own. But his dad will keep slipping out there, showing him, you know, try to show him stuff.
I gotcha.
But yeah, it's pretty different on him now.
Right, right.
And
learning the real world.
He's a real quiet kid and stuff.
Yeah. All right. What can you do to keep your speech pure when you get upset?
You're supposed to. Think before we speak.
Okay.
And a lot of times we let our actions take over.
So what's a good technique we could do to get us to think before we speak?
Mama always told me to count to 10.
All right, count to 10. Take a breath, right? Pause. Okay, good.
Maybe have some of these scriptures on the card and have it handy there in your pocket or something.
Well, I mean, also try to remember that once you say something,
yeah.
And so it kind of reminds you of what James says about being
the consequences. Think about the consequences.
Slow the
prayer always helps me a lot. You know, all right, before I speak to the person, let me speak to God first so that I have Him focused in my thoughts first before I go on to do the second. So prayer is a good way. Anybody else?
Mm-hmm. I've seen a thing and read it, probably others have too, where you take a piece of paper and crumple it up and straighten it out, and you know, it represents your words. You know, yes, you've apologized, but the wrinkles are still there, the scars are still there.
Can't get it perfectly flat again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good illustration. That's good. Good, good. That's good. That's very true. Influences. All right, what about this? List the keys to controlling the body. Remember some of the keys we studied earlier? One was, go ahead. Do you remember what it was? Okay. Okay. One was Scripture, right? It's what Jesus used against Satan there when he was tempted by the devil. Is it not written, right? It is written. And so he used Scripture. That's one way to help us control our body, right? The psalmist said, "Your word I've hidden in my heart so that I may not sin against thee." So hide the word in your heart. That means memorize it. Oh, which by the way, we're going to do our memory drills, right, on Wednesday. So do remind yourself of that. I know the fewer of you are new, you're like, what is memory drills? So we'll get you a little sheet back there. The second one was sobriety. You know, being serious about what you're doing, right? A lot of life can be, you know, fun and frolic, but when it comes to creating the right habits that we need over our body, we have to take it serious, right? I remember it was Brett Hoagland shared from another preacher that he had heard one time before, said that fun is like a live wire, a hot wire. You get a hold of it and it gets a hold of you. You know, those electric fences, those wires, you know, that's why they can't let go. And he said, fun can be like that a lot of times. And so if life is just all about that, then, you know, you're not going to be in control of yourself. Something else will be. Yes, we can have innocent fun. But when it comes to controlling our body, we need to take that serious. And the Bible even tells us to be sober-minded as Christians. If we want to fight against the devil, we got to be sober-minded, for the devil walks around about like a roaring lion. And then the third one, anyone remember? Self-control. All right. So you got to learn to control self. When your body tells you you want something, you have to begin to develop saying no. If you always say yes to every inclination that your body gives you, then you've not developed control over self. Rather, you've developed indulging of the flesh. And all indulging of the flesh is not inherently evil, right? It could be needing to eat. But if we always feed that, then what can happen? And we can become gluttonous, right? So the point is that when we practice self-control, even in those innocent areas, it's going to help us be in control of self over those things that aren't inherently evil, right? The sexual passions, desires, foul speech, other kinds of things like that. Self-control, you got to cultivate that in your life. And this is one of the keys to controlling the body. All right, now Liz, add in your key that you have. Oh, was that it? Oh, okay.
That's what I was thinking about.
All right. So, Nancy?
What's our favorite verse? Proverbs 36, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. Proverbs 16:3, commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. I can't find the verses right now, but I know there's so many verses in the Psalms where David says, God, praise to God, direct my steps.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I believe in prayer. Yeah. We do our part, but I think it's really important that we diligently seek Him in prayer, asking Him to direct our steps and control our tongue. There's a lot of things that I don't get accomplished a lot of times, but it makes me feel better.
Right. And you know, the Bible tells us anything we ask according to His will, He hears us. So if we want to make sure we always have a prayer that will always be answered, pray that prayer. Because that's according to His will. And so it's one of those surefire bets. I'm going to get His help.
Back to what Emma said the last time about diligently seeking. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Good, good. All right. Why is modesty important to God?
It's because it separates us from the world. You know, that first verse you read about darkness and he's not come out and said, you know, the length of stuff. There are guidelines that he's given us, and I think he's given us the intelligence to sit down and figure out what that is. And, you know, and plus, it's not only in our dress, but in our actions, too. And the way we conduct ourselves, the way we sit, or, you know, and act and everything. But people can look at us. There are a lot of people I look at that, you know, I would never consider them a Christian because of the way that they're not dressed.
Right.
You know, but, and especially when I see some of these prom dresses and everything, it's just really discouraging to see that. And more Christians are, you know, dancing at weddings and, you know, going to dance parties and everything and not thinking a thing in the world about it. It's just a little discouraging.
Right. So why are some of those things not modest that you just mentioned there at the end?
Well, it's because they're exposing so much of the body, and it's like that's just not what God intended, and it's not showing the proper respect for God and His commandments.
Right.
And because, you know, Jesus talks about if we love Him, we'll keep His commandments, and so we have to know what those are. And so, you know, just exposing our body. It's like we don't care what God says. We're going to do whatever we want to do.
Right.
And we're going to want to fit in with the world.
Right. So the sense of shame is lost, right? When you're willing to just show everything to the world. Good. Anybody else? Justin.
See, God's in His Word speaking out against the lust of the flesh. How does it look then if by our body presentation, that's what we are emphasizing? It kind of runs counter to all that God's trying to accomplish. So it makes sense that He would not be usually modest in our lives.
Right, right. Very good. Yes, Hannah. Right, right. Very good. Good comment there, Hannah. I appreciate that. Remember, too, modesty is also about our attitude. And our attitude then is reflected by our actions. So if we had those fruit of the Spirit, then we're not going to be this showy, flashy, you know, extravagant person and also very revealing of the flesh. Like Hannah said, you know, we're to reflect God. And not self, and we want them to see God.
And one thing I was thinking about too is, you know, we don't even have to look at pictures. We just, when I open my computer and the little news thing is there, and they'll have a headline that says so and so wowed everybody with their Dixie Duke shorts or whatever they're called,
yeah,
or in a two-piece bikini or something like that. And I'm going, you know, that's just another way that they're indoctrinating.
Sure, sure, right, right, very good. Good comment. Anybody else? All right. And as Liz said, very important, even for the church, because you see individuals in the church today push those lines, the gray areas that we're talking about, right? And oftentimes go beyond definitely the gray areas. All right. Let's go to this next one down here. Number 8. How does honoring father and mother evolve as both the parents and the children get older? Right, right, sure. As they become aged, you still take care of them. Yes, that's right. What about in the time frame of teenagers to parents? What do y'all think? Are teenagers right? Did they finally figured out they know more than the parents? I mean, it all of a sudden dawned on them. They know more. They got it figured out better. You see how honoring the parents apply in those stages as well, especially in those stages. when they want to spread their wings and feel like they know more of the sign of the times. They need to be humble, submissive, and willing to listen to their parents' advice. And then obey their parents, right? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you live long on the earth. So that's so important to God, and it will promote longevity of life if they listen to their parents. Number 9, why should a person wait to start one-on-one dating until they appreciate and practice agape? Love always, he always caps, all caps, agape. Agape love, you know, it's... Well, first off, what is agape love?
Sacrificial love.
Okay. It's a sacrificial love. Willing to give of self.
Isn't that the lesson where he gave different ideas for dating and going to places like Lowe's or people?
That, right. He had two lessons on that particular topic of dating. But why should a person wait? Why should they wait? Right, right. Can a 12 or 13 or 14 year old really understand what that means to sacrifice self? We really don't have much to sacrifice. I mean, you're pretty much, you know, dependent on your parents for everything, you know, and everything ultimately is handed to you. You don't work for anything because you're still in school. I mean, these are youthful ages, and so then that kind of dating scenario, since it's not about agape love, it becomes more about eros, right? The sexual part of it. I used to have this chart, the statistics of those youth that had sex before marriage. And the lower the age that started dating, that they had sex before marriage, those that started, you know, the lower the age, the higher the percent it was that they had sex before marriage. I forget when it was down to like 12 to 13, it was a very high percentage. Once it got to 16, the, you know, the numbers start to trail off a little bit. To 18 to 19, it's much, much safer. Because they now possess more maturity. They know, they understand, you know, what it means to be of self and to sacrifice self. So those are some reasons why a person should wait. And the parents should try to encourage their youth that way as well. Let's see, number 10. How will pursuing purity impact the places you go and the people you date? There are certain places where you'd say inherently that purity does not reign there, right? And so as a Christian, avoiding the gray areas, you certainly avoid the black areas then, right? The areas that are dark and darkness reigns. Clubbing, like I said, dancing, these areas, bars, drinking. This is not where a Christian should be. To try and pursue the light is what we should be doing. And so pursuing purity impacts then where it is we choose to have some of those dates and getting to know you sessions. Anybody else?
Yes. Parties at somebody's house when the parents aren't there. If you go to somebody's house and find out the parents aren't there, then you need to get out of there.
Right, right. And then he made a good point in the book, saying some will have them even when the parents are there, because the parents are worldly and say, I'd rather them be doing this under my roof, right? Drinking the alcohol here, you know, having, you know, sex relations in a safe place, you know. And so the parents actually provide the occasions. Needless to say, youth, alcohol, even old people with alcohol, it's not a holy mix, right? It's like oil and water. We just don't fit there. And if we're kingdom subjects, children of the Lamb of God, then we don't find ourselves in those places because we're of the light. Yes, Thomas?
You think sports is pretty safe for kids, and we hear... you know, of course, they have their heroes, their father. And there was a guy out in, I believe it was San Diego, who played for a baseball team. And kids looked up to him. And he got caught doing drugs and stuff. So he got suspended. And then the other day, the coach of a team, he was I don't think he was married to the woman, but he had a kid with her. And in the contract of all of the sports, they put in there now, you can't have any kind of sexual relations with anybody on the staff. And so he got caught doing that. And so now he's out for the whole year. Just think what the impact the whole thing's got. And his kids, you think sports would be a lot safer for them to, you know, interact with. But nowadays, you know, you don't know anymore. All
right. That was the Celtics coach, wasn't it? Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, we got, as children of light, we have to have our eyes peeled. And I think that's what that first verse was talking about. Walk circumspectly, right? Redeeming the time. It's going to require that sober mind to do that, and a desire to want to please God. Let's see, we're about out of time. Look at that last paragraph there in Hot Pursuit, where he says, this lesson is the end of this workbook, but the scriptures and principles we've studied are the beginning of a life led for God's glory. We've seen in every lesson that these morals, standards, and behaviors do not accidentally happen. You make conscious decisions every day about a number of things. Will you choose God's best with every situation and decision? Or will you compromise with the world? Don't flirt with temptation and wander around the gray areas of life. Zealously run towards God, His righteousness, His light. Be in a hot pursuit for purity. Chase God's best, and may God bless you in your purity pursuit. I appreciate Brother Robert's booklet and his study. It's well written. And as I was looking at this front page again, the cover of these skiers walking up the mountain, it does a good job of a portrait painting of these individuals that are making the hard trek, and the white of snow, the purity that they're we ought to be pursuing in our lives as they are pursuing to climb this mountain of white, pure snow. May God help us and bless us to do that very thing. Thank you for your comments during this quarter. I didn't get any volunteers for the men's to teach, so I'm going to do next quarter again. And what I'm planning on doing is, you know, the Old Testament has the minor prophets. Well, I was thinking the New Testament has the minor letters, we might call them, the minor letters of the New Testament. There's seven letters that are 1,100 words or less. And so I don't know if I can get them all done in a quarter, but we'll try that. So the seven letters, the minor letters of the New Testament is what I'm going to plan to do. And then maybe another man would take over come January. We'll see. But this coming Wednesday, we'll have our auditorium class where we'll do our memory drills that we learned during the pandemic, and we'll get to ask questions of the children of some of the things that they learned. So that'll be this Wednesday. All right. Class dismissed.